This is Frank Prattle. My name is Zephyr Thrull. You're listening at WPS1 Art Radio, PS1 Contemporary Art Center, a MoMA affiliate. You're also listening to KPOO 89.5 FM here in San Francisco. You might also be listening to our most gracious host's website, San Francisco Arts Commission Gallery at www.sfacgallery.org, and of course at frankprattle.com as well. Today is a double, triple, quadruple, quintuple, if that's even a word, special program that's going to blow your socks off. We're talking about public versus private, and the guests today are Julio Cesar Morales, who's an artist and co-founder of Queen's Nails Annex here in San Francisco. Hi, Julio.
Hello, how you doing?
Doing good. And Hu Hanru, the director of exhibitions and public programs at San Francisco Art Institute here in San Francisco as well.
Good afternoon.
Hi, guys. So maybe just start out with telling us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
As Zephyr mentioned, or should we call you Mr. Frank?
It's really up to you.
Okay, I like Mr. Frank, actually. So I'm a visual artist and also a co-founder and still working with Queen's Nails Annex. That's an artist-run space here in San Francisco. And I also teach at the San Francisco Art Institute.
Yes, Paul Hanru. People call me curator, but I guess it's part of my job. And otherwise, I'm writing, I'm hanging around with artists, and of course, enjoying life.
All over the world.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that you guys share in common is, Hanru, you happen to have curated a large-scale biennial recently, the Istanbul Biennial, the 10th anniversary one of that. And Julio, you were an artist that he included in that. Maybe, Hanru, you can tell us a little bit about the biennial. We'll dig deep, don't worry.
Well, when you curate the biennial, actually the first thing you would get is some complaints from the artists because they all consider they are being misguided or badly treated. Is that the case?
I was treated pretty well, actually.
Yeah, okay,
yeah, so I'm very happy to hear that. Except for the way back, that took me 30 hours via Moscow to get back, but besides that, it was good.
Then you have to complain.
That was the Mexican government.
Wow. Well,
it's okay, don't worry.
Well, sometimes airports are, blocked because of some reasons.
I know. I thought I would have a really good time at the Moscow airport, but no.
Wow. Yeah. Enjoy it. Okay. By the way, Istanbul Biennial, it's... Maybe if I was telling you something different, maybe Julio can correct it. It's perhaps quite a big project. Mm-hmm. I guess it's a project. As you know, Istanbul Biennial has been considered as something important or even very important for the international art world, because it's one of the first so-called non-European, non-Western biennials, especially like 20 years ago, it was really considered as kind of avant-garde, venture going out of the mainstream, and bring contemporary art to places where it was not supposed to be. Important kind of moment for the change of, let's say, global art scene. And now, 20 years later, I am very, lucky to be able to curate the 10th edition of that. And since it's a 10th edition, of course, it's kind of symbolic. When you get 10, you feel you're older and you grow up, and then you have to really make your way to, real life. So for the 10th edition, that means 20 years later, it's really time to think about something more ambitious. So with this in mind, and also with the kind of pressure that you can imagine, that I decided to make a biennial which is much more than an exhibition. I guess it's much more like a kind of urban event that takes over different sides of the city, and also the events actually happened during 24 hours a day, basically. So that was a decision which is trying to challenge let's say, the conventional idea about what a biennial should be, and to really to look for a possibility to make sense again, you know, after 20 years for such an event to be directly connected with the city, with people living there. And when you look in, when you look at the city of Istanbul, it's really a place where people really are incredibly creative and energetic, and especially they don't sleep. So, you know, when people don't sleep, well, you have to really offer them something to do.
Mm-hmm. Would you, I mean, honestly, you would say that they sleep less than Americans?
I guess. I mean, you would never go to dinner at 6 like here.
Right, right.
Yeah. And you go to dinner, you go to have maybe the first drink at 6, and then it goes on until maybe 12, you start eating, and you enjoy life until
till the wee hours of the morning,
and then you go to office again. And that's most of, you know, people do.
So one quickly to interject, though, one of the things that I was most taken with was the title of the show. Yes. You know, many times biennials, they come along and they have names, you know, such as like spectacular or something like that. You know, it's something to draw attention in a very, you know, immediate way, 1 to 2 word phrase that is commonly used in advertising, you know, like to sell a car or biennial. It's almost the same thing now.
Well, unfortunately, I don't really quite share the same kind
but
of
yours,
logic.
Yeah, yours was completely different.
Yeah, so I came up with a really long...
Very long
title. And as long as, you know, just like it takes basically 2 to 3 lines on the newspaper. The title is called Not Only Possible But Also Necessary, Optimism in the Age of Global Wars. So it's... The idea is really, the title comes in a second when one day I was having kind of drink with some people maybe, and suddenly it came to my mind that I should call this thing, this biennial, in such a long title. And I just make up my mind that, you know, the next morning I went to the meeting and say, okay, I have a title now. The title is this. It took maybe 5 hours for my team to remember it. And
They didn't do it like in acronyms or?
Well, basically, the idea is really to say, you know, a biennial after 20 years being such a big effort with the collaboration of all the people involved, especially artists, especially all the complicated history that the artists can represent. How can we just make into a simply like a, you know, a kind of fast food thing to be consumed in 1 second by the media? Or by, you know, whatever. So it's really important that everyone makes an effort to get access to that. And even, you know, if a radio should talk about that, it's not in 2 minutes, it's in 20 minutes at least. And if you have a newspaper who's interested in writing on that, it's not like a traditional way that you have a 5 lines review on an event like this. And I think it's really a question of how to respect it's an ethic question, and on the other hand, also how to preserve complication and complexity in our time that, you know, everything is kind of, you know, dominated by kind of efficiency of mass media communication.
Right.
And I think it's really important to do something that which is not easily being understood and consumed and distributed and sold out. I think it's really important to preserve, you know, the possibility of being complicated.
One thing that I was taken with was kind of the secondary title of it, when it says optimism in the age of global war. Now, optimism is not generally a word I hear bandied around art circles very often. It tends to be more the snarky kind of ironic commentary that you hear brought up most often, and it's you know, with kind of a mean sarcastic edge, or at least clever to it. And so the phrasing of optimism is something that I find particularly powerful and like quite a bit, and one that I find reflected in your work a lot, Julio. Maybe you could talk to us a little bit about your piece for the Istanbul Biennial and how it relates.
Well, my project for the biennial was part of another, I guess, a connecting, or the laboratory to the biennial, which was here at the San Francisco Art Institute, which was World Factory, kind of artists looking at globalization and also looking at different types of informal economies, and specifically the work that I had for that project was an investigative project I've been working on for quite some time now that, you know, sort of documents informal economy, street vendors, and economy in Tijuana, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. And so it made perfect sense in regards to the whole thematics that Hanru came up with. And I think I remember one thing that Hanru mentioned at the opening is that he mentioned, because of the complexity of the subject matter, that this I'm not sure if I'm quoting you right, but I think this is what I remember. He said that, you know, some things in this biennial are incomplete. They're not finalized projects in the sense of that things are in transition, and they're always in transition in regards to the complexity of certain subject matters. And I think that's what stuck to me when you were doing the opening talk of the biennial. And so when I actually went to see the work in the biennial, I did see these beautiful pieces that were maybe did not have a closure in that sense.
That tended to be more in flux that way as well.
Exactly. And I think also one of the interesting things that I've read a couple of reviews from the biennial in different magazines and different sources, but one thing that wasn't addressed that I sort of witnessed that I saw was the actual design layout, at least for the what is the traditional one by the port? Which one's that one?
The Entrepot?
Entrepot, yes. Yeah, there it was almost the exhibition display was backwards. You know, so really it was almost like seeing, you know, the backdrop of everything. It's almost like going to a movie set and seeing, you know, what goes into creating the backdrops of these movie sets.
Or similar to like maybe the design of the Pompidou that way, you know?
In a way, yes, yeah. Exactly, yeah. So I mean, that to me worked incredibly well with the thematics, and I think Hanru mentioned it was his stab at being an architect. Is that right?
Yeah, that part I designed it myself in a way, of course, working with other you know, inspirations of, you know, by people who are specialized in design. And I think the whole biennial actually has been really constructed based on different things. It's a 2-year project at first. Julio said, it's not one-off kind of, you know, display. It's an ongoing event. It's like a performance that, you know, goes on for 2 years. And within this 2 years, actually what we have done is, number one, is to research into the necessity of having a biennial.
Right.
You don't need to have a biennial in the city. When you really need a biennial, there must be a reason.
Right.
And the reason is really how to closely relate this event to the everyday life there, and also how people think about that, and relate it to their history, relate it to their agenda of economic, social, or political changes. And that is really important. This is why actually, after some research, I really came up with this idea to deal with the question of different kind of modernities in different contexts. In the time of, you know, global wars, or you might call it globalization with different conflicts, right? And how much actually in history this has been negotiated, and modernity has been invented in different ways in different parts of the world. They come up with different project of modernization, how this works and how this don't work also, and how much, you know, all these things should be reconsidered today. And so that becomes a kind of ideological backbone, let's say, of the biennial. And that is not a theme, that's something between the context and something between the context and also a content. So it's like really bringing up a kind of ambience, right?
Yeah.
And based on that, you know, how much this is related to a physical side of the biennial. That means, you know, a biennial is not a book, it's not only ideas. It's very important, it's a fact, it's a physical fact. How this, as I said, it's a kind of performance, right? And how this is performs in an urban context like Istanbul, which is such an amazing city, complicated, beautiful, exciting.
Kind of the East meets West of it.
Right, and also, you know, this is how, you know, every part of the world tries to project itself into it. So Europe is trying to reinvent it itself in Istanbul, for the last thousand of years, and while Asia is also trying to share a part of the cake. So, you know, it's not only about East and West, it's about how to complicate it, everyone's existence because you're engaged with this place. So this place also has been a very important kind of stage for, that you might call it a kind of drama of modernization from the creation of the Turkish Republic to now its negotiation with Europe, its negotiation with Middle East, and all this together. So, how to connect it to the biennial project with this context and history? And it has to be translated in the physical form. And so I decided to do research on the urban situation, the structure of the city, and especially some buildings, some very important buildings which has marked different aspects of modernization process in the city. So we have the Atatürk Cultural Center, which is much more dealing with the question of political transition, political utopia, and what kind of problem is facing now.
So, I mean, when you're approaching a biennial, you know, many people, there's many critiques against the idea of a biennial. Like, it's definitely not a new thing anymore. I think, you know, Venice is in the 110th year or something like that of it. So it's an old thing now, you know. And so many people have gone under the I don't know, I would say the critique that the biennial is done, that it's a dead medium. And so you obviously, you know, when you're approaching a problem like that, you've heard those voices that are like, you know, you must do something new if you're going to do anything at all.
Well, I think doing something new is not only about, you know, showing something fresh or sexy or fashionable or whatever, but it's really about look for a new relevance every time to the place. And how does relevance actually, in turn, you know, coming back to change our way of dealing with art, how we try to, you know, redefine what our activity is. So basically, for me, I have been doing different kind of biennials in different contexts. And every time, I think it's really important to really to understand this negotiation between the given context and the optimist aspect of how art can actually influence the context and also the context and also influence the arts. So in that way, you know, the case of Istanbul for me was really a huge opportunity to do a experiment with this.
Yeah, to me it was almost like three stages. You know, you had three different locations. Well, at least, you know, there's other stuff gathered surrounding the biennial, but the three main stages were, you know, one that I participated in is one of these classic modern early 1950s.
Actually, it was built in 59.
Yeah. Right, and so it's this, you know, really interesting building that now is being utilized for what?
Well, it's actually textiles. It was built by the local textile association, industrial association, which is really a typical example of how, you know, a Turkish modern economy has been built up based on the logic of so-called import substitution industrialization. Right. And how at the time, you know, they built up the textile industry as the main industry of the country. They built this building, really, it was a really interesting building that tried to accommodate the individual needs of different textile sectors. And on the other hand, the building itself really reflects a perfect combination of hyper-utopian modernist kind of project and the traditional bazaar. So it's a very, very interesting building. So all these buildings I have been choosing became the beginning of the conception of each project. So the biennial was actually, as I said, it's very complex. It's not one exhibition. It's a series of events or a series of exhibitions being constructed around the implication of each site. And each site actually shows us, for example, the Atatürk Cultural Center is about a political utopia. The one in the image here, that it's called World Factory. Yeah. It's basically about economy, different economy models, functions in the globalization context. And then you have the anthropos about global trading and migration. And in the same building, actually, we built a second floor, which is a dream house. So people can come and spend the night there.
Yes,
and
this,
dream.
This is
and
what I
watching
wanted to
the,
talk about.
Phosphorus.
Now, anyone who's ever been to a biennial, like you'll know that like one of the characteristics of the biennial is that after, you know, an afternoon, you're absolutely exhausted. That like the information is getting thrown at you left, right, and center. You got to read like four books before you understand this one piece, and then you know, and then you're off to the next piece 20 minutes later, and you got to read another four books to understand that one, you know. And the idea that, you know, people would do more than just put benches out for you to sit on, but actually to incorporate a rest chamber, someplace that you could actually sleep, and then as well, I believe, study the dreams
that
people
have. You can go there actually to sleep. You can watch the beautiful landscape. You can also listen to the sound pieces, which is a record of different parts of city. And then you have really different artists to propose different way for you to deal
experience
with this
the work.
Idea of rest and break, right. And emptiness. I think it's really important to bring interruption in the time that everything is being kind of consumed.
Right.
And it's really important that people do nothing sometimes.
Right. Did you end up taking a nap?
Yes, in the beanbags. Yeah, the beanbags, yeah. Yeah, they were great.
And any rememberable dreams?
Well, you know, there's a lot of parties as well. So, you know, you did have to take a little break in between the parties.
Yeah.
You know, there was all this, I think artists were also asked to give specific audio pieces or specific text pieces that would be incorporated in this area of the exhibition.
Right.
So it was actually pretty calming and, you know, helped you sort of dilute some of the work.
And no. in the catalog also, the artists are invited to send their dreams to be a part of this section. So every artist actually was invited to write down their dreams and to be published in the book. So people come here, they look at the book, they can read the dreams of the artist while they're watching the beautiful moonlight. Mm-hmm. Or,
any dirty ones? I mean,
well, of course. Well, you know, who do you
there's
think
some,
artists
there
are?
There are some violent ones, too.
So, Julio, I wanted to talk to you. It's similar to Hanru, what we've been talking about, the idea of really kind of turning curating on its head that way and really approaching it from a different angle. You yourself are a curator as well, partial curator, partial artist for Queens Nails Annex. Tell us a little bit about your curatorial experience there.
Well, my curatorial experience really stems from being an artist here in San Francisco and benefiting from, you know, the mid to late 90s sort of artist-run spaces in San Francisco. And having that being outcast or taken away after the dot-com boom, I just felt like I should start a space that would sort of give back and to specific artists that can actually benefit from that as I did in the late 90s. So that's really why Queens Nails started, was to have an exhibition space that is not pressured into showing finalized pieces, but to utilize it as a laboratory and specifically with audio and video based projects. And so, you know, sort of an extension of what I do as an artist. And so I don't completely consider myself a curator, even though I've gone on to curate other exhibitions. So it's interesting that people are sort of coming to you at a certain point and asking for references to, you know, what's happening, what's new, and so on. So sort of a blessing. At the same time, I don't want to, I don't know, lose that either.
Right.
You know.
I was talking to a friend recently, and feel free, both of you guys, to jump in. And she just graduated from the curatorial practice program at Bard. And her project tended to be more, I would say, an artist project, that she just ended up doing this project and then, you know, kind of called it a curatorial project and afterwards, you know, and was able to graduate and all that, blah, blah, blah. You know, I assume you can graduate from wherever if you pay the money, you know, but I didn't mean that. No. And that's no dig on her project. Her project is very good.
Yeah.
But what I'm getting at is that really that blend between that artist curator now that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you absolutely personify it. And Hanru, what are your feelings on that?
Well, I'm very happy if artists can be a curator. The problem is actually curating is about spending 9 or 10 hours in front of the computer dealing with shipping, transportation, insurance, fundraising,
tax editing,
and babysitting the artists, booking tickets, and all the things. I mean, if artists are happy to do that, welcome, you know.
Julio?
Well, you know, to me, part of doing it as well is kind of taking a little bit of the power away from curators as well. And, you know, sometimes I think you can see, not, you know, my friend over here on the left, but, you know, I've seen a lot of curators just kind of like exceed their powers and, you know, it's like this, I don't know, this sort of thing that you have to balance. But at the same time, you know, if I'm a visual artist, you know, I'm going to take all the power that I can get. And if that means that I get to organize or curate an exhibition, I'm going to go ahead and do it.
Well, this is why I don't think really I'm a curator, you know, in that sense. Yeah. But I'm just, you know, babysitting a lot of strange people.
One to harken back to the Istanbul Biennial, one of the projects that I was most taken with was something called Nightcomers.
Yes.
Maybe you guys could talk a little bit about and the kind of community involvement that brought.
That's right. I mean, Nightcomers actually sounds really very, you know, it's almost like a taboo here in this country because, you know, talking about it has to do with communism. Basically it was, if you remember, maybe you're too young to remember that. I was hardly, you know, a kid when the Cultural Revolution started. One of the major events of aspect of Cultural Revolution in China was something called Dazibao. That was the big text written in very big letters by people, by the mass, they say, to criticize the bureaucracy. And also as a kind of propaganda of Mao's idea, you know, the participation of the people in the revolution. And then that actually lasts for more than 10 years at its end of 70s. What is interesting is at the end of the Cultural Revolution, middle of 70s, Dazibao was very much used by people to criticize the system itself.
Ah.
So there are many people who actually came up with this famous, for example, in Beijing, there's one place called Sidan. It's a wall, a district where you have a long wall with this kind of writings, like huge, typically written on newspaper with big characters, criticizing the government, criticizing the party, claiming for democracy and all those things. So it was called the Wall of Democracy. The interesting thing is when, you know, the Cultural Revolution ended, and this thing also was forbidden. And then that remains something really important, and I guess in the States, in the 60s, 70s, people actually talked about that. And in France, many people actually used the same form, you know, for their revolutionary whatever claim. And then a few years ago, 2004, when I was in Paris curating the Nuit Blanche, which is the White Night event, which is a very interesting event that organized by the city government of Paris to open up the city once a year for one night from 8 to 8, 12 hours.
8 to 8, yeah.
Yeah. From 8 in the evening to 8 in the morning.
Right, right.
Of course, then nobody sleeps. They hang out and then they see all kind of contemporary art events. So I was one of the curators for this event in 2004. One of the projects I did was to claim back this possibility to bring art in a democratic way to the city. So what we did is actually I spent like 6 months getting people to send their video works because I thought, you know, today the most democratic voice is electronic image videos. So basically we set up a long wall of 200 meters, which is about 600 feet? How big is that? 600?
Yep. 600.
Yeah. Long, with more than 10 screens, and they're projected on the street, of a selection of about 120 videos among thousands of applications. So I spent 6 months on, you know, working on that. And this time, I think it's also an opportunity to bring the the biennial or the artworks to different parts of the city by using such a possibility. So in the meantime, I didn't want to do it myself. I think it's really important to offer the opportunity for the local young curators to work on that. So basically, we invited 5 curators from Turkey and work on that. And so they actually selected 150 videos from thousands of applications.
To be broadcast in
to
the city at
be projected
night.
In the city. And
right.
So they worked with a couple of Dutch artists to select sites in the city. So we end up having like 30 different sites in different parts of the city, especially in places where people would never have access to art. So every night they bring this to project it in different parts of neighborhoods.
Right.
So that goes on for the whole duration of biennial, and now it's still going on in other cities.
Wow.
So it goes to different cities in different parts of the country, especially in the eastern part. And they just announced that the next curators just came in, and then they have the first kind of meeting, and then as a part of that meeting, they also continue to broadcast this. So basically, this project hopefully can go on for a while.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the thing that really struck me about it is that, from what I understand, and unfortunately I didn't get to go to Istanbul, but next time you'll buy me a ticket, I hope. But
that's easy.
is the idea that you could be walking along the city, and completely unbeknownst to yourself, there is a quote unquote work of art happening when you turn an alley, possibly a dead end alley that drug dealers usually hang out at. There is now this huge wash of gorgeous video happening, and it's collected from not only across the world, but the people in your own community, and that it's really a platform for local voice as well as a global voice being brought together in almost a guerrilla style that I found really appealing. And what was the response to it by the people in Istanbul?
Well, I guess people are pretty happy about that, especially after some time. In the beginning, people were kind of suspicious of how this could work. But after a couple of times, actually, people start getting used to it. And actually, even some people follow the program.
Yeah, it became a meeting meeting point as well,
yeah.
And almost like a pilgrimage. But I do love that idea that it's this accidental audience, that they're never going to walk into one of the exhibition spaces, but it's in a public sphere in that sense, so they'll run into it.
Right.
So
right.
I think it did, at least I witnessed a couple of the ones where created a following, in a scene, which was great.
I think it's really good for something that Julio is obsessed with, the street vendors.
Yes.
I think it's really good for the street vendors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys both so very much. My name is Zephyr Thrall. You're listening to Frank Prattle. You're listening at KPOO 89.5 FM, Poor People's Radio here in San Francisco. You might also be listening to WPS1 Art Radio, PS1 Contemporary Art Center, a MoMA affiliate. You might also be listening to our gracious host's website, San Francisco Arts Commission Gallery at sfacgallery.org, and of course at frankprattle.com. My two guests today, who are dynamite, was Julio Cesar Morales, an artist and co-founder of Queen's Nails Annex, and Ho Han Ru, Director of Exhibitions and Public Programs at San Francisco Arts Institute. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Gracias.